Back to From Trauma to True Love, the podcast where we explore how early trauma impacts our ability to create safe, nourishing, and lasting love, and how we can break free to write a new story for ourselves. I'm your host, Leila Reyes, and I'm so glad you're here with me today. In this episode, we're diving into a powerful tool for self-awareness and growth, the Enneagram. And if you're not familiar with it, the Enneagram is a personality framework that reveals both our strengths and the deeper motivations behind our behaviors. What's fascinating and to me and important for our conversation today, and really what I'm personally most curious about, is how trauma can shape, distort, or amplify the ways our personality type shows up in the world and how we relate to ourselves, others, and life through the lens of both early trauma and our Enneagram type. To help us explore this today, I'm excited to welcome my dear friend, Jerise Pappas, who is a certified professional transformational coach who integrates the Enneagram and Internal Family Systems, or IFS, in her coaching approach. And Jerise has been immersed in transformational work for nearly 3 decades. She began her journey in 1995 with Landmark Education and was introduced to the Enneagram soon after that, and launching a lifelong exploration of consciousness, healing, and personal development. Over the years, Jerise has studied with many of the Enneagram's most respected teachers, including Helen Palmer, Ross Hudson, Jessica Dibb, and Beatrice Chestnut. Two of her most recent impactful studies have been Ross Hudson's 9 Gateways of Presence and Holy Ideas year-long programs. In her coaching practice, Jerise helps people discover the parts of themselves that may be protecting or limiting them and guides them towards reconnecting with their authentic essence, the deeper self that holds clarity, confidence, and compassion. Her work is about awakening presence, integrating all aspects of who we are, and empowering others to live in alignment with their highest truth and purpose. So welcome, Jerise.
Thank
Hi.
You.
Hi.
Appreciate
Hi.
That introduction. So awesome to be here with you.
Yes, it's so great to have you. You know, I want to say to everyone that this conversation is not to put anyone into a box. It's really to shine light on how the Enneagram might be influencing trauma and help us move towards greater awareness and healthier relationships. And so some of you may already know the Enneagram really well, and for others, this might be brand new. And the Enneagram is more than just a personality test. It's a map of the patterns we developed to keep ourselves safe, to be loved, to make sense of the world. For survivors of abuse, these patterns often got layered with trauma responses. So sometimes what looks like just my personality is actually a survival strategy that helped get us through really hard experiences. And that's why I wanted to bring you here today, Jerise, because you have this gift for helping people see the difference between what's authentically us, the part of us that's our true nature, and what's been shaped or distorted by trauma. And for me, that's where the possibilities come alive, when we can say, oh, this coping strategy made sense back then, but it doesn't have to run my relationship now.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'd love to, start by just asking you, like, from what I shared, you know, what's your overview of the Enneagram? How do you see trauma influencing the way people show up in their type?
Thank you. Well, I think you did a beautiful introduction and overview. And yes, one little nugget I'll take and run with first is I love that you said that this is not about putting anyone in a box. As a matter of fact, it is really the absolute opposite of that. And there is so much that we can learn about ourselves through the Enneagram, as it is a growth model. It's a transformational model. It's a way that we get to bring the view of compassion, the approach of compassion and love for ourselves, as we come to understand our deeper motivations. And this is why I'm in love with combining parts work or internal family systems with the Enneagram, because, hey, all of us deserve PhDs and masters if we made it to whatever point we are in our life. And we did it through protectors inside of ourselves, parts of us that are protecting us from harm. And those parts, if trauma happened in our lives, became extremely potentially fixed and vigilant in a particular way of thinking and a particular way of reacting to what presents in life. So this is an opportunity through compassion and being held to see how is that operating in me? How can my presence relax that? How can my presence, when I'm actually able to be in, and I come from a three-centered healing approach, right? Our belly, right? When we talk about having a gut knowing, right, and a gut instinct, the belly center, or what's called the body center, it's also the instinctual center where we get that sense, oh, I need to pay attention to this. Oh, this might be harmful. Oh, I need to eat. Oh, I need to pay this bill, right? It can be that whole spectrum, but it's our instinctual way of knowing what to do. That arises, and this is inside of all of us, regardless of what our core type is, what our core growth path is, right? And so the belly center, and then our heart center, that's the other center. It informs us what to be attuned to, right? How am I feeling about this? It is also where the core suffering of our heart gets known. And I'll say known. And when, as we're talking about, when we take a little bit of time and go around the Enneagram, the points, I'll speak a little bit about what can happen to each type, to our heart, to how we suffer when trauma happens. We will get to that. And then the third center is our head center, right? So this is where we have, in the Enneagram, Layla, we call it fixations. But the fixation is essentially a thought pattern and it's the mind strategy of how to fix that core suffering of the heart that happened likely when some type of trauma happened. And in the Enneagram, our word for that is passion. But I think it's really understandable calling that the core suffering of the heart. So, and I got that from Russ Hudson, who I
Beautiful.
is my mentor. So the abiding approach here is to balance and to have a fluidity, an open fluidity and alignment with our head, our heart, and our belly, our gut knowing, and be able to see, oh, well, if I'm a head type, right? If I'm somebody that mostly is strategizing with my head, and this is my processor, and I get fixed in thinking what could go wrong here, right? Then that's more of what the sixth mind will do, right? Breath, I can bring myself into my heart. Let that start to relax and shift completely where I'm coming from. Then new possibilities emerge. And the head center can become open and available to me to serve me, rather than derail me. So, does that give a little bit of an overview?
Yes, and then to how to like I guess there will be people listening who know the Enneagram a little bit, and then people who don't. So there's three centers, you said. So, and then there's nine numbers, right? So maybe you can just give a brief, the head, heart and belly centers, and yeah.
So the first thing I want to say is that all nine points of the Enneagram, the potential, the essence qualities of all nine points are available like an archetype, like an available world in and of itself of resources, all nine in all of us. And a lot of people don't understand that. That actually is, it's the that all of that potential is
Like a
all of us,
wholeness.
right? That's our wholeness. Our core type where we are going to focus and do our work is the thing that can contract. And you know, if there's contraction, right? So you imagine the eyeballs are inside of my hand. It's not able to see all of the other resources in all of those other in all of the other 8 points, right? If my one point is six, all of the other 8 points and all that potential is inside of me, right? So that's as we do our work and we get that
To
understanding,
access it.
it's like the bud that was tight opens and we have access to
Yeah.
all of those resources. Like ChatGPT opens up inside of us, right? So to go back to your question, each center has three types that arise inside of it, right? So the head center has types five, six, and seven. It's also called the mind group. That can also be referred to the mind group, and it can be also be known as the fear triad, right? And we'll get into more of that later. But the three types arise, those three types, the mind group arise inside of the head center. The heart center has types two, three, and four arise inside of this, right? And so this is our and this can be our push-pull relationship to shame, which I'll bring up because I believe you wrote a book that has a lot to do with that.
Interesting. And we'll talk about me being a two, right? Which is
Right.
shame,
So,
go figure.
and one other thing about the heart center is this can also be called the image group. Right. And some of these names and the growth paths are very counterintuitive, right? So each of these centers that I'm talking about, it's where we often have the most resources and the least capacity. If that's where our growth path or core type starts, because it's where we're most likely to contract when trauma and life happens like that, right? And moving over to the body center, the belly center, that is where types eight, nine, and one arise. This is the center of our body knowing, and the struggle, if you will, can relate to autonomy and some another influence having power over us, and how do I preserve my autonomy? So, does that answer the question pretty well?
Absolutely, absolutely. So then, how does it sound to kind of look at the different types? And what I'm looking for is how does trauma amplify or distort the gifts of that type or the way that we show up. And we can start wherever you want, but of course, I'm a two. And you've helped me so much with really getting a handle and evolving beyond the limitations of that Enneagram type. And so, for me, my biggest curiosity, because of with the Enneagram, is of course about me. I want everybody to benefit, but let's make it be about me for a change.
So does that mean you're going to be willing to tell one on yourself too?
Of course, of course.
Because that's part of we can do deeper work, right? We can make more progress the more that we feel safe and held and can be honest with ourselves and get to know those parts that are protecting us. And to relate to them with compassion, right? The context for this is compassion. Then it's not really, then we can let those different parts come forward and
With
feel
all types,
for all
for
types.
all types, yeah.
Exactly. I'm just reminding parts inside of you that we're gonna, if they're gonna tell themselves, that we're gonna tell them, great job taking care of you, right? We want them to
And
feel, yeah.
yeah, and it's taken a long time for me, you know. I mean, how, when we've known each other, like 15 years or something like that.
Okay.
And it's taken, it took a good 10 years to, you know, to really work with understanding how that was, you know, like taking the actions that would then grow me beyond the limitations of that contract, in the beyond the contraction of that, of my type,
Yeah. It
right?
came. Yes. Yes. And I thank you for saying that, because it does, no matter where we start in the Enneagram. And when I say that, I mean what it, regardless of what our core type is, right? And our tendencies, it takes courage, right? It's like it's when we get to a place where it's like, okay, I'm ready, to look at this and to be able to bring loving compassion to.
And you know, when I remember being at this group with you and Curtis, right, where I was the guinea pig in this little exploration, and everyone was sitting around. You were one of the students, and he asked, what is she, right? So the guys were asking me questions, and then to try and determine based on my answers and my response, you're looking from where I'm coming from, right? How I would respond, is pretty consistent in a way, depending on your type, is how I understood that. And then Curtis said, and I thought I was a nine, right? I'm like, I'm a nine. And great, that's wonderful. What's that?
And two and nines are
Are
look-alike
lookalikes,
types,
right?
right?
Yes, there are lookalikes in the whole Enneagram. And
Exactly.
so I thought I was a nine, which I felt kind of good about that. And then when Curtis, he came up and he said, okay, I'm gonna give you a hug. He came up and gave me a hug. Or, you know, or I gave him a hug, whatever. But it was this experience for me of, he said, you know, it was a long hug. We're just standing there. And then he said to me, is this comfortable for you? And it was not. Like, my neck was in a certain place, and I was not going to move because this is what he wanted from me.
Right.
Right. So there's the and then when he said you're a two, and he named all of the things around the two, I felt like, okay, I'm getting more and more naked here, more and more vulnerable, because the whole concept of a nine just completely disappeared. And I'm like, I felt like I was being seen for the very first time, but not in a way I wanted to be seen, because it was all of those protections and all of those, like, oh, you know that about me? Like, you know that I'm loving you just to get love? Like, that's one of the less healthy parts of, right, when in the layers of levels of health with the two. This is what I learned, right? And so now, I've looked at certain experiences in my life, and I'm like, wow, I put myself in that situation for the same reason. I opened myself up to danger. This is where the trauma comes in too, is I was also sexually abused by my father, right? And so now there's a trauma layer. And then on top of that, I'm willing to be in uncomfortable situations so nobody dislikes me or something like that.
Yeah, really, really good. Let me frame and highlight two things,
Okay.
and then we can keep going with this thread, because I think this is going to be really helpful to folks out there that might start it too. But also, there's some truths for all types in what we're sharing, okay?
Okay.
So
Yeah. And if we just end up talking about two in this, it's okay. I was thinking we
yeah.
went through everything, but people will be able to reach out to you and find out what their type is, and work with you if they
And we'll
want.
see if we can give a nugget before we leave
Okay.
about every type.
Okay.
We'll squeeze that in.
Okay, great.
Something you said that was so good.
Uh-oh.
Is when you said, "Oh, I thought I was a nine. I really like that idea." Okay,
Yeah.
so folks, if you are on the journey of still identifying where your growth path is in the Enneagram, where you start, right? Your core type. And you come upon a type that you're like, "Oh, yeah, I like this. This feels really good." That's your first clue that that's not your core type. Right? Because
Okay.
really, like when, let's go back to that moment when you're hugging Curtis. He's or you're both
Yeah.
in, you're both in this embrace, and he asked you if you felt comfortable. So this is where the work of being honest with ourselves comes in, right? If you said, "No, I'm good," if your defenses kept you from feeling
Yeah.
or right and seeing, "Oh, okay, I'm safe in this room. I can tell myself the truth,"
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And you did, and you're like,
Yes.
"I actually am really uncomfortable," right?
Yes.
So
I
the
think
work,
his next question is, then why did you stay like this for so long?
that's where I'm going. That's
Yeah, okay. Okay.
exactly where I'm headed,
Okay,
because
because this is a
that
difference from operating from authenticity versus survival strategies. No? Or you're going somewhere else with
that
that?
one more time.
That where you're operating from authenticity and you're able to say the truth, be honest, or you're operating from survival strategies.
Right. And again, I want to give people a compassionate olive branch here. When we have been traumatized, right? We mean really well, and our protectors have our back so intensely, they will create blind spots for us to be able to maybe access our authentic self and our authentic knowing, right? As we do this work and bring compassion and say, "Hey, you're this part's doing a great job. I want to appreciate you. Can I understand why would you stay in a situation and even a hug if you're uncomfortable?"
Yeah.
So maybe you can shine a light for your audience about like what would have you stay there? What
I
and
don't want to lose
let me
connection.
you're gonna
Oh,
okay.
go ahead. Go ahead.
It's a two-pronged question. That's question number one. And
Okay.
is there any part of your image or way that you're being seen by another that you're protecting?
Yeah, I want to be seen as somebody who's open and loving and caring. And so why would I tell somebody, no, you're doing something that's uncomfortable for me? It's easier for me to be uncomfortable than for the other person to feel bad. Something like
So,
that.
okay, can we go a little deeper?
Yeah.
So I started point six. I want people to think I'm open and loving and service oriented, right? But it doesn't undo me if it doesn't happen. So let's lean a little bit more in. What if somebody sees that you're staying in a hug that may not be where you want to be. And
Yeah, so
what does
this,
that bring up? Like, what happens inside of you when that happens?
it's a loss of connection. And so this is the part that I'm really curious about with trauma and type two, because for me, when I look at it from through the trauma lens, I stopped the abuse from happening. Like I said no, I stopped the abuse, which is not a common thing for survivors to do.
Right.
But what happened as a result of stopping the abuse, of speaking up and saying, I don't want this,
Yeah.
then I lost the other connection with my father that was healthy, that was good. And then I felt like, so this is all unconscious, of course, until it became conscious. But then here I am in a hug with Curtis, and it's for me, the clarity I'm looking for in understanding that from the Enneagram perspective is, for me, it was like, not wanting to lose connection, the healthy connection with my father that I lost by speaking up and saying no. So if I say no here, I'm going to be completely alone in my life. I'm not going to have any love or any connection.
So I'll just
So what?
let that land for a second. What happens with particularly with people at point two, right? But let me say to the audience, this is also the two in all of us, okay?
Right, because
So
we have
because
three
we do
all
have we all have it in us. It's
of
just
them.
what I'm about to say is going to be a little bit more intense and challenging to see and undo when my core type is two. All right. So because so there's a few things I want to say here. The first connection that is lost is the connection to your highest self, to your divine self, to your authentic self, to the love that you are in your own heart. Because if I am acting or being in some way to get your love and this connection with this Curtis, your dad, whoever, right? Whoever. And I am be needing to be in a position or act in a way that is go that I see you're gonna love me, like me, stay connected to me if I become that, right? Or if I serve this in this role. Can you see that I've now disconnected from what's authentic to me, maybe what I really even need, and for the two, what I am even truly authentically feeling. All of my attunement, all of my senses are on reading you, your heart, and your need. Like I am the most accurate X-ray machine of your needs, your wants, your whole system. What I've done, if as a two, is I have abandoned my own heart. Right? So, but the two, it's kind of like a dog that has like one of those protective on its head. It doesn't see that it has left its own self behind. It doesn't. And when this happens, the two is not in the person with two as their core is not doesn't have easy access to, and this may sound like a this may I don't know what this is going to sound like, but it to even knowing what I feel and what I need. Now, other types in the Enneagram could be like, are you kidding me? How is that possible? But this is where
Seems
this
so normal to me.
normal, right? You know, for other types, maybe easy, but they at least have a may have a sense, right? They don't have the same blind spots and protections in their system.
So so can I share a couple other experiences that happened for me? So I was in a community swimming pool at a resort, and with a group of people who I didn't know everyone in the group. And this man entered into the pool from way over there, and the antenna went up, my whole body tensed, and the hair on the back of my, all of that stuff, like the radar, is immediately screaming, I'm not safe. And I froze. This man came into the pool, nobody knew him in the group, came over to our group. I didn't know if he was part of the group or not, stood right next to me, put his arm around me, pulled me closer to him. And I was completely and totally frozen. How much of that? That's one. Let me share the other story and then see, like, remember that
Got
trauma
it.
and Enneagram, right? And so another time I was in a group setting as well, and I was paired with a buddy. And so we would go do whatever exercises and come back and then kind of debrief with each other, right? There'd be questions for us to ask each other and kind of just share. And after he shared a few things with me, I found myself asking him a very direct question. And it was, have you ever raped anyone? And he got so angry with me in that moment. And he just was like, irate that I would even say that. And you know what? Later that weekend, he attacked a woman at the retreat. And so, I picked up my radar, picked up on something. And then I had to wrestle with the weight of carrying that, I don't know, the awareness of responsibility, something like that. But these two stories, I'm curious, like, is that all trauma, or how does the two then, my response to that or my awareness of that, how is the two on this type have a special radar? Or is it a trauma radar? Or maybe.
Great. This is a super great example. And so this is where, again, because I think it's very relatable, bringing things back to parts within us, right? So this protective part of your two mechanism is also your superpower, right? So again, this is where there's nothing is all or nothing, black or white in the Enneagram, right? This is really a lot about the both and, right? And this is where, that part and the two has a superpower to really know sometimes before another person knows, what kind of person is this, able, right, to sense their, in this part, sense their heart, sense their motivation, sense, when I said it is like the ultimate X-ray machine of what another person needs. Are they safe? What's their true, what is their true heart about? Is it up to something malicious, or is it up to something benevolent? The two X-ray machine that, and then I just call it that, is highly skilled, gifted with an uncanny knowing, uncanny, where it gets into trouble with its own process is when it disconnects from its own heart and its own needs and its own self. So we want to keep the gifted part going. That
I
part
mean,
needs to.
I can tell somebody's character really quickly. And I can tell also when there's usually when there's trauma in their life, or I can read that and I'll know, oh yes, this is a person that, has these qualities or this I like that, superpower. But so there's this place of being naturally tuned into others, and then maybe that's what happens is it gets amplified when trauma's layered on top, right? So then what could be intuition and empathy in one situation could get turned into hypervigilance and over responsibility for that out there. Maybe scanning the environment. How do I protect myself? And then another thing that you said that was really, I know I've worked on this a lot, and I feel like I've evolved. You like in that superpower. I know what someone needs before they know. I know exactly what they need, but that's on the levels of health for each of the types is that here I am going to give it to you whether you want it or not. I'm not going to ask you if you need or want what I have to offer. I'm going to just provide it and then you're going to love me. It
Right.
doesn't work that way.
Right.
But when you're in that, when I was in that, the level of doing that,
Yeah.
right? I had to learn to wait for to be asked, or to make the offer, but be willing to not provide that thing, and also to not interpret it to mean that they don't love me, or that I'm rejected.
Correct.
I won't leave.
So, just to speak to what you just brought up, so the what can come up that creates the blind spot is when the person when the two mechanism gets identified with the role they're playing, right? Being the savior, the need provider. And a lot of times twos will find themselves in the helping professions because they're so good at it. And thank you all for being in those helping professions because we love you there, right? And so they'll be attracted to being nurses, therapists, caregivers, social workers, not exclusively, but those are some things that the two will be drawn to. And ways of being, right? Like I'm going to become indispensable to you because I can't bear the thought of being left alone because underneath all of it, I feel unworthy of love. And I'm terrified to feel that. That feels like death itself, right? And it, but it's because when the first, harms, if you will, happened. The two mechanisms started looking outside of itself for love and connection because the mechanism is so good at reading other people and right and getting, but then it's outside in love or outside in anything instead of first coming like, I am love, I am lovable, I am worthy. I am feeling unsafe right now, and I love myself. What is the best thing for me to do? If I'm connected to my heart, I'm going to make really good decisions. It may or may not protect everything from happening or prevent everything from happening, but if as a two, if I truly am in my own court first, know that I am lovable, worthy of love, am able to give myself in equal measure what I am, have a superpower to give someone else. Can you feel like there's a grasping or a grasping that's going to be relaxed? The other thing that can happen is the two can get identified with something called pride. And the pride is can create that blind spot because I get so identified with the roles that I play, I am actually proud of myself for what I do. But when the where the error comes in, the error of where the self-forgetting comes in is in that over-identification with whether it's the pride about what I'm doing for another, when it's at the expense of understanding where I'm really coming from. Am I connected to myself, or am I just trying to get someone to love me because I think I'm unlovable?
That's been a huge trajectory for me in being first being aware of when I was doing that, and then consciously just taking a step back and going, I'm okay, I'm safe, I'm not, let me just, here's something I can give, and then let it go. Right? I don't need anything in return
Yeah.
anymore.
I'd love to dovetail back to your story, the pool example. And because I think some of your listeners have had, maybe a lot of trauma that has happened and can also, look at How else could we, you know, maybe they can relate to your story, and even though their circumstances might have been a little bit different. And I'm curious, right now, I'm coming from six, right? Of course, six, it's different than you. And so my mechanism is looking for what could go wrong, right? And also how to be safe, right? I have a lot of the six has a lot of vigilance about that, right? So I'm letting your audience know I'm listening from a different filter. So I heard you say that you asked this person, have you raped anybody? So my six mechanism, I would never have asked that question. I wouldn't, I what I would have done in that situation is my two part was active inside of me and I sensed trouble coming in the door, I might have gone to the authorities or maybe brought other people that are, you know, in a different position, aware, you know, saying I could be totally off here, but I'm sensing something, right? Or I might have asked a different question. Don't know what that would be yet. So I'm curious what had you asked that question, and would you have done something differently looking back at that moment now?
So looking back at the moment of saying, did you,
Asking that, yeah, have you ever raped anybody?
I missed the part of the question around the, like, so would I have done anything differently of what?
Would you have asked him if you could go back to that moment? Like you see him coming in, I think this person is trouble, right? Could be harmful. Would you have been so direct to have asked him that question again? Just curious.
Would I have been so direct as to ask him that question again if what? Say that one more time. Sorry.
Given who and where you are now in your life.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I do. I
Yeah.
do think I would ask. Yeah, I do think I would ask him that. But I have to say to you also that when that happened, I was a little further on my journey. So maybe it would have been that in the past, I wouldn't, maybe I wouldn't have. Maybe I don't know if I would have asked him, 15 years ago or whatever. I don't know, maybe that actually it was that long ago. So I don't know the answer to that. But I feel like I feel safe, right? I feel safe and I can ask that question, it'll come from a different place. Another experience that I had, and I'm, bringing these in because they're all trauma, and so this is, I'm just remembering this right now, but I remember being at a like taking my, I think I was taking my kid, one of my kids or something, to have the pictures taken, like in a department store, and then I saw this man. And he had like a, I don't know, 3-year-old, 2 or 3-year-old kid. And I knew he was molesting her right then, right there in front of everybody. He had his hand under her dress. And I knew this was what, I didn't say anything at that moment. I was like in shock. But again, my whole body knew
Yeah.
that this was happening here. Can I prove it today? No, my whole body was activated and doing that.
Yeah, so this is so good that you're sharing this, and I hope your listeners are feeling like, yeah, I have been in that situation too. My body has also given me that confirmation of a knowing, right? And so that is also part of the two gift, right? It's that and it's also instinctual, right? So I know you have in the instincts, you have strong self-preservation. You have a very strong self-preservation instinct relationship there. And so what that means, it's like that's your body's health, you know, usually self people that have a dominant self-preservation instinct have are very aware of energies around them, right? And they become extra attuned if trauma has happened to this, right? So this is where your sense, it's like whew, extremely intelligent,
Yes. So
right?
let's look at again, because this is my main curiosity here for this particular episode, is then with the two having that kind of sensitivity, superpower, whatever, then how does trauma, and you might not know the answer to this because your world, my world is more about the trauma aspect, right? But how does that, exaggerate those core patterns, or how does that, like, how can you tell the difference between a healthy intuition that's protecting us and a trauma-driven fear that's keeping us from trusting or connecting?
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what my question is around it,
Well, I think,
but overlay.
each individual is going to know that for themselves by how their nervous system feels. Right? If I am in, I will feel a sense of a kind of a panic, or I will feel a sense of disconnection, right? The two is all about connection. And if I am in a little bit of a pat in a it's might not going to be so conscious, but the heart is going to know something is off, and it has it sends messages through the nervous system. Trust it. Trust yourself. And this is where the work comes in, because when the more trauma has happened to someone, the more the two mechanism is going to stay like this tight bud, right? The irony is the more that I relax and open to my own self-love and knowing, allowing myself to honor my own needs, allowing doing that work to get to trusting myself and knowing that I am love and lovable and worthy, right? It relaxes that need to almost move toward what might be an unhealthy pattern or person or situation, right? The more worthy I feel of being loved and lovable, the more emboldened I will become to extricate myself from a situation that is unhealthy. I will feel worthy to open up to that therapy. I will feel, right? So.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. So we don't have a lot of time here left, and not to go really deep into anything, but I'm wondering if it felt right to take a little tour through each of the Enneagram types and maybe somehow trauma might distort them.
And maybe I'll speak to because I think it's so powerful. And again, I want to give the credit of giving the language to this. This is from my studies with Rutz Hudson around the core sufferings of the heart, and there's actually names for them. And my hope is that you through these descriptions that your audience can feel. I was like, oh yeah, that's familiar. And then it's a whole other explanation about how to bring compassion to the parts that are trying to heal the suffering of the heart, right? So, the two, the it's called the severed heart.
Oh.
And
See, I can, go ahead.
it's somehow as a two, my heart got severed from like all the other hearts, right? And You know how core connection and attunement is to the two. If my heart feels severed from all the other hearts, that is the worst imaginable existence on earth.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
I get
Yeah.
goosebumps saying this. So this is why this work is, this is deep compassionate work. Right. And then we work with those parts that, we're trying to protect that severed heart. Right. So we can go maybe the three in the Enneagram since we
Okay.
started in the heart triad
Okay.
here. And so similarly, the when trauma happens to the three, there is also the growth is to recognize how did I abandon my heart also by trying to prove my worth on that I'm worthy of love by providing value and accomplishment to, in a way, it goes back to my original community, whether it's my family. I was able to see a little bit like the two, but different, what they value. And I'm going to become that. Can you see again the pattern where you left your authentic self, right? So
Yeah.
authenticity is going to be ultimately the healing and the ways that the mind will deceive me from what is actually authentic for me is the path, right? So, and the three core suffering of the heart is called the empty heart.
Oh.
So my heart feels empty. Again, it's has something to do with ultimately me abandoned, right? And it's this terrifying feeling that there is nothing inside of me. That there is nothing inside of me. Again, we're kind of also getting back to worthy of love, right? And but is that true? Of course not. Of course, there is this divine loving being at the core, but the mechanism will have us forget that. So a lot of this work is having us remember our authentic selves. So the four in the Enneagram is also part of the heart triad. And the core suffering of the four, it's called the stab heart, the stabbed heart. And so the four system will go into like this all-in triage to try to do anything and everything to stay with my heart that feels stabbed. And what can happen, right? There's all kinds of paradoxes in the Enneagram. For our friends that start at four, the four mechanism I can identify intense feeling with aliveness. However I get there, I'm going to feel more alive. So this is where if trauma has happened to me, I may stay in the loop of feeling the pain of the trauma, for it could be years, decades, a lifetime, if I don't find my authentic self, my unique worth. The four is a lot about our uniqueness. For me to find my unique worth and realize that I can feel as healthy and I can feel joy also. That's also just as equivalently a valid feeling as the traumatic pain that came with the event that happened to me or multiple events, right? So it relaxes a kind of an addiction to feeling this triage attempt to fix the suffering, but because if I stay with the feeling, at least I'm feeling something. Right. Does this make sense?
It does make sense. And again, I'm looking at with the trauma overlay of it and how it impacts, how trauma impacts that then is just with the four, for example, everyone who's abused or, has trauma in their lives is going to have something that's saying, the shame, the, this happened to me, and then the impact of that on our lives. So with the four, I can see how that would be like always being in the pain, not being able to get out of the pain of what happened to you way back then. But let me
Right.
live it through again and again and again and again, and that's
Right.
how it can feel.
Right. And that feels safer
Yeah.
than because the bud is closed there and doesn't
Yeah.
realize, oh, wait a minute, I could relax away from this, get into more of my authentic my unique heart, my unique worth, and
Yeah.
it have another experience. That's
Yeah.
what the healing work will give them
Yeah.
access to.
Yes. So I don't think we have time to really go into any of the other types right now, but I know that you're available if anyone is interested in exploring that more. I love the walkthrough that you did do and how you helped us see that our type isn't the problem. It's the way trauma exaggerates or distorts it. And that awareness can give us a path to reclaim, the gifts of our type. And I really, I what I'd love to just kind of close with is if you have a practical takeaway for survivors, of trauma, and that they can carry with them, something simple, doable, that helps them begin moving from trauma-driven patterns into the more grounded, authentic way of being and living.
Yes. And I'm going to keep this really simple, right? When we first
Yeah.
started talking about the three centers, right? So the first thing would be to notice, am I locked into a thinking pattern that is creating suffering for me? Right? If we notice that, then to come back to the breath, right? Take a deep breath. Bring yourself into presence with, so I like to breathe in four, hold two, and out eight. It really calms my nervous system down.
Okay.
And for people who start with the belly types to get in their body, right? So again, so if I'm feeling this some like a tightness in my belly, if something's gripping me there, kind of come back to the heart, right? Or if I'm noticing we live in a culture that really can create a lot of anxiety in our thinking patterns, right? So it's kind of notice where there is concentrated tightness. Come to the breath, come back to your heart, and allow for consciously bring compassion. Remind yourself in this moment, present with myself, I am safe in this moment, right? And of
Bring
course, if you're in a situation where you're not safe, call
and
911.
get out. Yeah, get out of it for
But
sure.
if you're truly in your home and or somewhere where you know you're safe,
Yeah.
to give your nervous system and your heart that message.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. This is such a powerful, insightful conversation. So I really want to thank you. If you'd like to learn more about Teresa's work, explore her coaching offerings, or connect with her directly, you can visit Gerise Pappas. That's GERISEPAPPAS.com, GerisePappas.com, or email her at Gerise. At TherisePappas.com. And I think it's pretty obvious that I've worked with Therese personally and know from experience that her work is truly about helping people to increase their self-awareness and their authentic presence and integrate all parts of themselves, live from the clarity and compassion of their true self. So, Therese, I want to thank you again for being here and sharing your wisdom with such heart. And to all of you listening, thank you for spending time with us. If this episode resonated with you, I'd love for you to share it with someone who might also need to hear it. And if you want to keep exploring how to move from trauma to true love, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Most of all, I want to leave you with this. You're not alone. You're deeply worthy of love, and it's absolutely possible for you to create the safe, nourishing, and authentic relationships that you long for. Until next time, I'm Leila Reyes, and this has been From Trauma to True Love. Take good care. Thank you for joining me on this episode of From Trauma to True Love. I honor your courage for being here, taking steps towards the love and connection that you truly desire. I've been there too, stuck in painful patterns, longing for love but unsure how to create it in a way that felt safe, real, and lasting. You don't have to figure it all out on your own. If you're ready to explore what's been holding you back, and discover what's truly possible for your relationships, I would love to support you. Visit Leila Reyes, LeilaReyes, Leila Reyes, and schedule a call today. We'll take the first step together toward the deep, meaningful love that you were born to have. I can't wait to connect with you. Until next time, take good care of yourself and know that real, lasting love is within your reach.